What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a What For podcast brought to you by The Athletic. And we like bringing these podcasts, or we love bringing these podcasts when Watford win. And when they did, 3-2 at home to Stoke-on-Trent. It started off, I'll keep calling that, Mike. You may laugh, but I will keep calling him that. Are there gunshots there, Michael? What's going on?
There's someone nearby is very, very happy that Watford have won. They're putting on an impromptu firework display. They're a cavalcade of colour going off above the Vicarage Road end there, just to mark a wonderful win for Watford. Wonderful, I'm not sure. These blooming fireworks, by the way, haven't just started after the game. They've been going off throughout the game, and each and every time they've nearly given me a heart attack, more so even than Watford's early defending.
So Mike was at the game, you got to see it, and so we'll find out the things that we might have missed on Hornet Hive, but massive round of applause for John Marks and Tommy Mooney for keep going in the circumstances they had to try and keep broadcasting their commentary. It was an early goal for Stoke. Well, basically, we were outdone by a nice set play. Maybe, or at least questionable goal for Watford. Did it cross the line or not? Apparently the technology said it did. An honest penalty got Watford the 2-1 lead. Stoke have got a proper striker in their midst with Powell scoring the equaliser, but the Ken and Ishii show finished it off injury time, making it 3-2 to Watford. Mike, let's start, because this is a negative and this is you ready for it. Was it really just Watford just hadn't woken up yet when Stoke scored that first goal?
Yeah, one of our number on the WhatsApp group, we won't name him for fear of shaming him, but didn't realise that Watford had kicked off at 7. He thought it was 7:45. Yeah, it felt like Watford's defence thought the same, because they were caught absolutely cold by Stoke, who did start pretty well, but Etienne Capoue sort of set the tone very early on with a slice clearance, went straight up in the air, and you heard him utter a swear word rather loudly, which everyone sort of giggled at, but it did, from a more serious point of view, it did effectively start that little run that led to Stoke scoring their opener, and it was another mistake from Ben Wilmot, really, that gave away the corner, and then Stoke, it was far too easy for them to find Fletcher from the corner, and he had to turn home from a yard out. Very, very disappointing to start like that, and especially as we've talked sort of pretty much all season about this Watford side, that we've massive questions about us when we go behind. So to fall behind so quickly, so avoidably, really, it was a neat move, but Watford need to be better than that at that stage of the game. So to fall behind was worrying, disappointing. And yeah, you did wonder where we were going to go from there.
Well, we got a goal back, Jason. But let's not talk about the goal quite yet. We'll ask Mike about that, because he was, again, in the stadium. At halftime, it was 1-1. Do you think actually Watford did deserve the 1-1? Because we didn't jump into life after their goal, but we definitely became the stronger team in that first half.
I think so. We certainly dominated possession, didn't we? And again, I kind of touched on this on Saturday. Is it the early goal that then dictates our pattern of play? Is that the reason we are then controlling the game, because the opposition are sitting back and looking to hold on to what they've got, knowing that we're not really that threatening up front, and hoping they can just see it out and hit us on the counter? So yeah, I think if you look at the quality of the play, perhaps it wasn't all there again. I thought Stoke were looking to nullify our quick crossfield balls. They obviously done their homework and know that we try to sort of hit these diagonals, particularly sort of from left back to Ismail Assar, and they sort of handled it reasonably well. I thought we were getting more men into the box. I thought perhaps we were trying harder in an attacking sense that way, whether the movement in the box when we were trying to put crosses in wasn't as good, because again Stoke mopped that up. But when the chance came, we took it.
Sort of. I want to counter Jason's point a little bit. I thought we came alive after the goal, but I was really disappointed with us up to the equaliser. We had a little rousing. The game really came to life as a whole after the equaliser. But I was really disappointed with the way Wolford played. They bypassed midfield, and as Jason said there, that's they tend to do that with those diagonal balls, try to get the flanks into play. But there really wasn't much play in midfield, and it just looked very, very one-dimensional from Watford. And there was one particular moment when Kiko took a brilliant ball down on the right, put a lovely ball in, and there was no one there in the box. It was just incredibly frustrating that, you know, we seemed to be doing what we're supposed to do, get wide, get the ball in, and no one attacking. And it felt really frustrating. And then from out of nowhere came the incident. And yeah, you said, John, it was controversial, and it was, because so cleverly rifled a really decent shot, caught it really super cleanly with his right foot, hit the underside of the bar and span back out. Keeper caught it and then effectively ended up carrying the ball into the net, courtesy of a collision with João Pedro. Now, there was a number of possibilities for how that goal will have gone in. A, it crossed the line from Cleverley's initial shot. B, the goalkeeper carried it over the line himself when he caught the ball and then turned round and sort of voluntarily sort of carried it over the line. Or finally, which I think is what we settled on and is more likely, we haven't had any replays here at the ground to see it, but I think there was a collision with Pedro, and it's that took him over the line. Now, what happened was the referee very, very clearly looked at his watch, so was looking for that Hawkeye confirmation, and he very quickly got that after the goalkeeper had carried it in. So I wonder, my initial thought was whether the referee was checking his Hawkeye watch to see if the Cleverley chance had gone in. And by the time, while he was looking at it, Pedro effectively bundled the goalkeeper in. The ball's obviously crossed the line and then flashed up on his watch, giving the goal.
No, Mike, that's not possible. Little old Pedro pushing someone over the line, that's almost impossible, surely.
But confusion reigned in the press box, and the confusion reigned down by the touchline, because then at that stage the fourth official made his way to the touchline. The referee came over to talk to him. So they were obviously having a confab about it. The Stoke players and Stoke coaching staff were getting increasingly irate, because they were working on the basis that the goal had been given after Pedro had barged into the goalkeeper. So it all got very, very confusing. And to be honest, sort of 5-10 minutes after the final whistle, we're still not 100% sure. I'm certainly not 100% sure what happened. My best guess is that it was the collision with Pedro that took him over the line, and the ref has given the goal on the basis of that. It's to be perfectly frank, I think we've got away with one there. That's my initial take on it. Like I say, we haven't seen a replay, but I think we're lucky to get away with that one.
To me, it looked like the keeper carried it over the line as Pedro's coming in. I think he's turned because Pedro's coming in, and it looked like that's where he's taking it over. Now, if we're using technology and using something like goal line technology, we're talking in binaries here, aren't we? It's ones and zeros. So for me, shot not gone in, keeper's collected it, he's turned, ball's gone over the line before Pedro's collided with him. So before there's a foul, a goal has been scored. Therefore, that's ball's out of play, goal given. What Pedro does after doesn't impact the game. Seems a bit, perhaps it's a bit of I don't know, false or technical way of looking at the game. And if it happened the other way round, we'd all be screaming blue murder. But it's good enough for me. I'm having the goal.
Absolutely. Not at all. Not Jason. I don't think that's a wrong way to look at it at all. The goalkeeper has the ball under his control, and he's taking it over the line. And if that's what's happened, then the system has worked. And I owe the referee and the officials an apology. Like I say, I haven't seen it, but I don't think we should be apologetic about it. That is a goal. The ball has crossed the line. The keeper's made a mistake from, you know, a decent effort from Cleverley. So if that's what's transpired, then I feel a whole lot happier about it. And what happens subsequently. But yeah, a bit of confusion, but I don't think we ought to feel if that's how it's happened, then great. I hope it is, because that would clear it up, and that would just take that little bit of controversy out of it, and we can enjoy the win that little bit more.
Because Jason, you know, that was half time, 1-1. Second half starts, nothing's really changed in terms of personnel at that point. But what was the attitude, do you think? And how was it different, say, from Barnsley, even different from Wickham, from Watford?
Well, it sounded different, didn't it? John, I'm going to echo your congratulations to John Marks and Tommy Mooney for their commentary efforts. Now, I hate listening to Watford on the radio, I'll be honest. I like to be able to watch the game and see what's going on. I love listening to football on the radio, just not Watford games, because I get nervous. But I didn't feel, sort of during that sort of first, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, I wasn't feeling nervous, because I didn't feel, it didn't come across that Stoke were really causing us any trouble. And it seems like we had, whilst the personnel weren't changed and perhaps the tactics weren't changed, it felt like the performance we were getting from individuals was upped, and it sounded like it was Ismaïla Sarr was the main protagonist when it came to that. It sounded like we got a performance from him in the second half, and it's so disappointing that we weren't able to see it and sort of judge it for ourselves, but that's the impression I was getting from the commentary.
Well, Michael, you were able to see it because you were at the game doing your duties for Opta. What was it like then? What was he like? Was it literally just the fact that he had an A game and everyone else around him was supporting him, was doing their thing? Was he the difference between the last few games and us winning this game?
Well, actually, there was the TV blackout nationwide. There was no pictures here, so no one saw this. But what actually happened was I was brought on at halftime. And it was me that was the catalyst for that improvement. No, we were much, much, much sharper. As soon as the second half kicked off, the tempo, the energy, the movement, the dynamism, Watford were moving forward with purpose. Everything that was missing for that first half an hour, all of a sudden manifest itself. I thought Ben Wilmot had a slightly shaky start to the game. He really grew into the game in the second half. He pinged a lovely crossfield pass to unlock the Stoke defence, and Watford did look by far and away the much better side, and Stoke didn't trouble us at all. And yes, I think Ismaïla Sarr was very much the catalyst for that. He had the bit between his teeth. He started moving around the pitch and nipping in, and he saw that pace which just Watford can't really struggle to bring into games. But he started asking questions of the Stoke defence. He was switching flanks, and yeah, he was the in a. It was quite an odd game, and it probably fits Watford's MO for this season. For much of it was played not at walking pace, but it was quite pedestrian. There wasn't much going on, and as Jason said, there you would have been no wonder you felt confident and relaxed really, because there wasn't much happening. But any quality that was on show really was stemming from Ismaïla Sarr. He just seemed to have flicked a switch in that second half. His touch was crisper, his movement was dynamic, and he started to get his pace into the game. And it was ultimately that won him the penalty just after the hour mark.
Was it just the fact that we were all threat but not really dangerous, though, until that penalty?
No, I think the movement was better. Everything that we weren't doing in the first half, we were doing. I think Garner made a difference when he came on. I thought he buzzed around nicely in the sort of opposition half. We just didn't make enough. We didn't ask enough questions in the first half. We weren't organised enough. We weren't dynamic enough. We weren't quick enough. We just weren't asking questions, and that all changed in the second half. And while the keeper didn't have to make loads of saves, we made life a lot more difficult for the Stoke back line. They had a lot more to worry about straight from the get-go in the second half. And it was just, it looked like it was not just us, but a lot of Watford supporters have bemoaned the lack of intensity, the lack of imposing ourselves on the game. And, you know, we mentioned Wickham in particular, that we shouldn't be letting them dictate. We should be imposing, and that's what we did at the start of this second half, and it was good. And when Watford got that penalty, I thought they deserved it, and it came from a sloppy back pass from Stoke. But that's what happens when you're up against someone like Ismaïla Sarr, who just has quality and pace.
There were substitutions, Jason. One of them was Andre Gray, the other one was James Garner. Andre only played a couple of minutes on Saturday against Barnsley. Didn't really get an opportunity to impose himself or show himself off, you know, in the new Championship Watford side. How do those subs go, do you reckon?
Firstly, I'm pleased with the timings of the substitutions. It was still 1-1 when he decided to make the substitutions. And he's decided to make that with still half an hour left in the game, I think. I complained on Saturday about about leaving substitutions too late. I think he's got the timings a bit better tonight. I was interested that he still went through with the substitutions. He had a clear plan to bring these two guys on. We went 2-1 up, went through the substitutions, taking the goal scorer off, João Pedro, and to give André Gray some more time. It sounds like perhaps we didn't utilise André to his skill set again. From the commentary, we were hearing that André was kind of a bit of a frustrated figure at times because we were still sort of persevering with the diagonals, getting the ball down the flanks, which is fair enough when you're playing wing-backs, you're going to do that. But if you've got a man who's playing against what sounded like a higher line where he's on the shoulder of the last defender and he's looking to sort of break through with his pace, it sounded like we weren't taking those opportunities when they were there, and it would have been good to maybe see it mixed up a bit, maybe make ourselves a little bit less predictable as an attacking threat. Maybe that will come with time. Maybe we'll see that as André gets more playing time. We've certainly got the players from the likes of Capu that can play those balls through. And we'll get to see André utilised more, not just in terms of minutes, but in terms of what he's capable of.
He looked hungry. He was making the runs, and you're right. He did look a bit frustrated on a number of times with the ball. You know, you've seen Etienne Capu slide those balls through the middle, haven't we, before? And a couple of times André could have been away, and he did. There was a bit of a vocal disappointment from him on a number of occasions. But I think that's what you want from your striker. You want them to want the ball. You want them to want the ball to feet, and that's absolutely what he did. I thought he buzzed around, he was waspish, he looked aggressive, and he was mixing it nicely, and I think he is going to add something to Watford in the coming weeks, certainly, because obviously we've been thinking about it today. We have been unlucky a little bit with our striking options, haven't we? Paritza, who's looked good in the fleeting times, has been on, suspended and then injured. Troy and André Gray have both been injured, so it's nice to have him back today, and I was pleased with his sort of aggression, pleased that he was frustrated, and I think Jason's right. I think they will work on getting him into the game more and like Jay says again, mixing up a little bit and asking even more questions of an increasingly sort of beleaguered is the wrong word, but to give some more for the Stoke back line to worry about. But I thought there were encouraging signs there. But Garner came on at the same time, and I thought he helped as well. It just helped us make with the momentum keep it up a little bit. Like I said, we came out for the second half pretty good. Then there was a little bit of a lull. Then we got the penalty, and I think the change in personnel really helped Watford keep going. And up until the equaliser, it was sort of walk in the park is the wrong way to describe it, but exactly where Watford will have wanted to be. They were able to hold Stoke off at sort of arm's length. Watford weren't threatening, but Stoke weren't either, and it felt all the world like they were going to play out for a 2-1 win. But we all know that doesn't happen, does it? We don't do things the simple way here at Vicarage Road.
Part of the onslaught, let's call it. That's why I had in my head at least of Watford trying to get the win was Big Ken. He has been a little bit under the radar for the last couple of games, not quite getting into it, but he really got into that game, Mike, and he was the force that got the winner along with Ismaïla Assar.
I'm easily pleased, but I'll never not be mildly entertained by football players shouting, "Ken! Ken! Ken!" one bit in particular, just before Stoke equalised, actually, Ben Wilmot was absolutely hollering at "Ken! Ken!" to get back into position, which incidentally shows a bit of maturity and leadership from Ben Wilmot, which is good. But yeah, so Ken Semmer's sort of skill, strength, and determination that got Watford the win in the end. He was sort of batting down on this left-hand flank, battling away, and he managed to wriggle his way clear, and then along the byline, So he had to do really, really well to get himself any sort of space. And then he looked up and cut a ball back to around the penalty spot where Ismaila Sarr took a great touch and composed himself and slotted it away. But there's no way Watford would have won that game without that. A good bit of determination, tenacity, composure and skill from Ken Semmer. And I think, like you say, John, he hasn't been quite as front and centre in recent weeks as he was earlier in the season. But that was a really telling contribution and, fitting way to win the game. Brilliant from Semmer and really, really composed from Sarr, who deserved it from his performance.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Sean Murray, remember him? Yeah, that young little fella we all got excited about. We first met him on YouTube with some wonder goals for the Watford youth team. And under Sean Dyche, at age only 17, he made his debut for the Hornets. That was 10 years ago. Yeah. You feel old. Since he left Watford with his last game in 2015, he has been to Wigan, to Swindon, to Colchester, to Denmark.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now finds himself at Dundalk in Ireland. Adam Leventhal caught up with Sean last week. There's an article on The Athletic. Of course, remember, you can get a cheap subscription by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend. It's £1 a week at the moment. And he spoke to Sean about his time at Watford and everything that's happened since. It was called on the phone. So it isn't the best quality, but it's still fantastic to hear from Sean. Adam spoke to Sean last week to find out how he's been doing since Watford and what he remembers about the time when he was a wee nipper of a teenager.
At that age, I think I was 18 then, and I was just enjoying it. It was just, I wasn't given any information, just go out and play. So that's kind of what I did and loved it. Even after that, I had a few good spells in the team. Even when the Pozzos were here under Zola.
Yeah.
Under Beppe Sannino, I had a couple of good runs in the team. There was a lot of managers in and out. It's always hard, like for any player, if a load of new managers are coming in and you've got to impress again. So at some point, you're always going to be out of favour, and then it's hard to get back in. It was a tough time when they came in, but I still enjoyed every minute of it. Me and new players coming in from all over the world, learning off them, learning from different coaches. So it's invaluable, like the lessons I learned. I think that's helped me further on in my career now. Especially with a new coach coming in, I know how to deal with it. And then he's loved having me here and working for him. So that helped me, especially for this season.
How do you look back on your time overall? When you hear the word Watford, what emotions does it conjure up?
It makes me happy just because it is my local team and I was there for such a long time as well. Like, I think with everything has to come to an end. The years I had there, they were brilliant, all of them really. For me anyway, when I left, it was probably time I wanted to leave as well and try new things. Even though it's probably some of the things haven't been great and for other reasons I've had a lot of injuries actually since I've left Watford as well. So yeah, there's been some great experiences after as well, which I've held quite dearly. So it's been good.
How would you describe you as a player if you had to critically analyse what you do now in comparison to what people knew you for before, at any club, at Watford, at wherever, Swindon or Colchester or Wigan? How have you evolved?
Personally, I play a lot higher up the pitch now, so you'd probably say I'm an out and out 10 now, which before I was more of an 8 or a sometime in my early career I played on the left wing for Watford, but now I'd say I'm a number 10. And I don't know, I think I've got a bit more smart with my runs into the box and runs down the channels to help the defenders with an outlet, and it's been successful for the last month or so. Yeah, I'd say I'm more of an out and out 10, number 10 now, rather than a central midfielder or a number 8. I think that's changed massively. Obviously, I've loved it over here ever since I've joined. I played quite a lot of games last season, even though I was injured. Yeah, I think this season I've loved every minute of it, even though it's been a strange year for everyone. Yeah, it is kind of a chance for me to say I'm still here, I'm still still playing, and I've noticed it a lot as well. A lot of Watford fans just writing on Twitter and stuff like that. That I'm like, Sean Murray's playing in the Europa League, he's scoring. Brilliant to see a Watford player do that. So that's kind of nice to know that they could still speak about me after I've gone, and I'm still doing well, because I think it's been 10 years since I got my debut for Watford, so it's been a long time.
Do you think about maybe one day coming back over here, or is it just more about the here and now rather than the future?
Personally, I'm planning to try and stay with Dundalk as long as possible. I think I've been places and earned a lot of money and earned little money, and then this is where I'm happy. So I don't think it's all important where I play for now. I'm still ambitious, of course, but I think I'd rather just be happy. And my girlfriend here's got a kid and he's changing school, so there's lots of things you've got to think about as well. Not just yourself now, so I think that's just part of growing up.
So catching up with him, Adam, was it, you know, it's been a while. Lots of players move on. We're used to that. You've met lots of players in your work at the Athletic and doing Tales from the Vicarage who've left Watford, but they're much older. And he certainly felt very wise, didn't he?
It was interesting. Just in the interview, it dawned on me. I was like, you've been around for beep ever. And, you know, you're still only 27 years old, and it's strange to think that it was 10 years ago that he made his debut for Watford, and he's been through a lot. And I think that's, you know, that comes through from the piece, you know, as you heard there, that he's in a happy place at the moment, and I think that's really important for him. So it was great to catch up with him, and just a little insight into finally managed to get in touch with him. I was actually going to go and speak to him when I went over almost a year ago to Belfast to interview Albert McLenaghan, and we'd booked to also speak to him then, but it sort of fell by the wayside. But then it actually worked out quite nicely that I caught up with him as he was preparing to then go and play against Arsenal in the big game last week. Although it didn't go to plan, it was good that he had 45 minutes, and you know, it was just a moment for him, as you heard there, to sort of put himself back on the radar. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. He's 10 years older and wiser.
I think he's more than 10 years wiser, because we spoke to him, Mike, at the end of our second season of this podcast, so the Dice season, and we had chatted to him. It was in the Amex, the depths of the Amex, after Watford drew 2-2 against Brighton. And he was a classic young player. He was still going to college 2 days a week, I think, at that point. You know, he was doing an MVQ. And you know, it was great that he was in the first team and he was loving it. But he'd come through the academy. Yeah, he was going to be... He was the big hope, wasn't he?
It was almost like he had to be the great hope, because if you mentioned it, we interviewed a number of players around that first couple of years of the podcast, didn't we? People like Tommy Hoban, Lee Hodson, Scott Loach, who were all youngsters at the time who had come through. And we were having to rely on them, weren't we? I think the one thing that really did shock me, talking about timings, was at how recently he actually played for Watford. In my head, I thought he'd left pre-Pozzo era, but of course he played for two seasons while the Pozzos were in charge. So that was interesting. That sort of jolted the memory. But yeah, it just speaks of a different time, doesn't it? It's great to hear that he is so fond of his time as Watford, but it does transport you back. He sort of talked about Sean Dyche almost taking a chance on him, wasn't it, by playing him, and then he went on and played a number of games. But we talk quite fondly of those times, those youngsters coming through, and we like to sort of, we perhaps look at it through slightly rose-tinted spectacles, in as much as the academy was producing, and you know, the famous "he's one of our own" chant that Sean Murray attracted. But really, it was because we had to, wasn't it? We didn't have anyone else. We were having to rely on the youngster. So hearing from him does transport you right back to a very, very different time as a Watford supporter, doesn't it?
Adam, you know, we mentioned, and I said I saw the article, and there's a picture of him wearing the black top, the Watford home shirt with the black top half. And that was the end of the Zola Beppe Cennino season. And I forgot how much he played that season. But do you think maybe, what was it that sort of made his Watford career not sort of continue, or him to be part, even be part of Watford? Was it the fact that Watford got to the Premier League too quickly?
I think he was sort of in the... he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, really, wasn't he? Breaking through into the side when that massive influx of players was coming in that 2012-13 season, obviously the first season of the Pozzos. He did play, you know, a fair amount of games that season. He played 15 games in the league. And although he acknowledges the fact that, you know, looking back now, that was actually a really good experience for him. At the time, I would have thought it was pretty frustrating, even though he was getting, you know, a game here and there. But that second season, yeah, the 2013-14 season, which was sort of the difficult second album, wasn't it? It was, you know, Zola departing and then Cennino careering into the football club. He played a lot of games, 34 games in the league. It was the most that he'd played over the entire season. He played 39 in all. He scored 6 goals, and that was sort of matching his goal return for when he actually first broke through into the side under Sean Dyche. You know, the fact that he didn't stay was that he got a really nasty injury, a knee ligament injury in the January of 2015. You know, whilst it was finally clicking on the pitch for the rest of the team, he was sitting there watching it whilst, you know, Slavisa was leading us up into the Premier League. And then once the transition had been made from Championship to Premier League, it was going to be even more difficult for him to get into the side, I think, because there had been obviously a change of head coach with Kike Marc-Juan coming in, and they were planning for the Premier League and you're out of sight and you're out of mind, really. And when he came back in that summer, he was out, you know, and going out on loan. And that was the beginning of the end. So, he last played for the club in January of 2015. So I think it was a difficult time. And he said that was probably, you know, mentally for him, the most challenging time that he'd had. Although, you know, latterly, and it's discussed in the piece, his spell out in Denmark, that was also pretty testing. But at least then that testing moment bridged a gap to getting back to a place in Dundalk now where he's really happy.
What I thought was really interesting from both the piece and that little bit of audio we heard there was his, like, he speaks so eloquently and articulately. It was really nice to hear from him, but he gets across in quite a human form what it's actually like to play under so many different managers and to have that relatively high turnover, and because he did experience that, didn't he? And just talking about how hard it is to re-impress, if what a terrible way of explaining it. I just say Sean Murray is much more articulate than me, so maybe he should come on the podcast. But having to go in front of the manager and persuade him to be in his plans again and again and again. And then when you add on to that the injury side of things, so knowing that A, you've got to race back from fitness and you've got to prove yourself again to a different man, and then will you have to do it again in the coming months? I don't know why, because we've probably always worked on the basis that that's going to be the case and understood that that's difficult. But hearing from a sort of a young man who we have sort of seen develop into a man, really, it really sort of brought home just how difficult life as a footballer can be. And, you know, we tend to sit there, you know, when we started the podcast, we were 10 years younger, probably less responsibilities than we have now. And you sit there watching Watford and we travel the country drinking beer and cheering them on. And you think, oh, that's the life, isn't it, of a professional footballer? What, you know, cheering on lads half our age, they've got it easy, haven't they? When actually it's, he didn't want us to feel sorry for him, but he just described it, I thought, rather well. Just, and it was quite a nice insight into what life is actually like as a young professional footballer trying to make their way at Watford at that time. I thought it was really illuminating and really interesting.
He mentions in the piece as well, in terms of how your career path can be impacted by, obviously, injury, as we've discussed, but, you know, different managers coming in. Yes, there was lots at Watford, but then, and this has a Watford connection, that when he went to Swindon, Tim Sherwood pitched up as new director of football, and he was out of favour, so he had to leave Swindon. And then, you know, a positive Watford connection of Ian Moody, who used to be the operations manager at Watford, he called him, and then he got him in at Colchester, and he actually really enjoyed his time at Colchester, partly because of the fact that he was also playing with Lloyd Doyley as well, which was a nice link. But then going back to the fact that, you know, these experiences of having lots of different coaches, and in particular having two Italian coaches in Gianfranco Zola and Beppe Cennino, you know, weirdly, an Italian manager pitched up at Dundalk. He'd never had any first team training experience before in Filippo Giovagnoli, who then led them into the Europa League, where he's playing now. And he thought, if I'd been like any of my teammates, all these really intense sessions, you know, double sessions morning and evening, and, you know, all these sort of different approaches to training, which his teammates in Dundalk weren't used to, if he'd been like them, it would have been a shock. But he'd seen it and done it at Watford under Zola and Cennino. So it's actually quite nice that it's gone full circle. And now he's one of the experienced guys rather than being the kid that was pitched into this difficult scenario under the Pozzos.
Because Mike, the last recent fans forum, you know, Scott said, you know, they were going to readdress the development factor in the first team and the opportunities that they were given. But does it feel like we're going to get opportunities or players like Sean who've come through the system rather than just being young players? That, do you really think they're going to get the chance? But is it something you really, really, really want to have as a Watford fan?
I think you want a balance, don't you? I said earlier that I think we had to use too many young players, 10 years ago as it was now. I think there was just too much reliance on youth because there weren't the finances to bring in more experience. And I think increasingly, with football fans feeling distanced from their clubs for obvious reasons, you need that link. I think people do need a link with their club. And, you know, you hear Sean Murray, he's talking about how he is local and he speaks very fondly of Watford and the thought of them makes him smile. He's a local lad who came good for his local team. And as a supporter, that can't help but make you feel warm and fuzzy and happy inside. You're going to root harder for someone like Sean Murray than you are perhaps that someone's been brought in from somewhere else. And I think that's just the way football is. It still has its roots in community. That's, you know, most people who support Watford have some local link. And I think that is important for Watford supporters. But you do have to balance that, obviously, with, you know, when we're not talking about Sean Murray, we're talking about a football team that we want to get promoted back to the Premier League. And we know the landscape is immeasurably different up there than it is in the Championship, and certainly than it was to the sort of situation Watford were in when Sean Murray broke through 10 years ago. But on that note, they can develop players as well, and they can feed into the financial stability of the club. I thought it was a very interesting line in the piece that Adam mentioned, that there was Premier League interest around Sean Murray because he caught the eye, didn't he? We called them, what were they called? Typical Sean
Vintage
Murray.
Vintage Murray, we used to call them, yeah. From outside the box.
Yeah, 30 to 40, 50, probably 60 yards out. 80, that goal
easy.
Fulham by the time he retired. But there was Premier League interest around him. It was obvious to see why he caught the eye. We'd lost Jadon Sancho, and I do wonder whether Watford felt a little bit sort of once bitten, twice shy with Sean Murray, or whether they felt like he was more of a prospect than Jadon Sancho. Who knows? But both are a tale, aren't they? There's interest in them both. One's gone one way, one's gone the other. But they both, whichever way they go, they have a role to play. If they end up like Sean Murray and we end up talking about them in 10 years pretty fondly, then that's not a bad thing from a football supporter's point of view, is it? Whereas if they go down the other route and we actually manage to sell them for proper money, which unfortunately we weren't able to do with Jadon Sancho, but they feed into the financial stability of the club, then that's also good as well. So I think it's a sensible route to go down for a number of reasons. How realistic it is when success is required very, very quickly is still open to debate, but we'll see in the coming months and years how they manage to tread that tightrope.
See, Adam, the thing that really sort of I was most proud of, maybe, of my son, no, not really, but you know what I mean, of him, was the fact that his attitude, basically, do you think a lot of footballers out there, especially in this situation we're in, could learn quite a lot from how Sean is judging his success?
I think it's an interesting one because he is obviously very content at the moment, and he's very happy on the pitch and off the pitch. He goes into, you know, he talks about it in the clip that we played about his personal life, and that is bringing out the best football that he's played in quite some time. I suppose if you put the spin on it that at the moment, that is probably the most important thing because, you know, although he's been playing in the Europa League and he's, you know, been playing in Europe and playing at the Emirates Stadium and things like that, it doesn't really mean as much, does it, at the moment? He scored a goal in the first game of the Europa League against Molde. And he said, yeah, it just felt pretty much the same as any other goal. because there's no fans there. And then, you know, when you put it in the context of, you know, players now, other players, not himself, looking at moves to other clubs, yes, it's going to be financial. It's also going to have contractual elements to it whereby they want to secure their future for 4 or 5 years if they've only got 1 year left on a contract. But often you do wonder whether the actual reality comes into the thought process at times, because you're almost just, you're swapping one essentially soulless experience of playing football in an empty stadium for another one. And sometimes you're just better off sticking where you are, I would have thought. And, you know, maybe that even came into the thought process of Troy Deeney over, you know, the last couple of months or so when he was considering moving away from the club. But, you know, it's almost better the devil you know sometimes. And the most important thing, and this was highlighted for Sean Murray, and I think it's, as you alluded to there, it's the most rewarding thing, is that, you know, he's found this nice happy medium now where he's enjoying his football on, you know, on the field and the surroundings in Dundalk with good teammates. And I think that means a lot. And yeah, I suppose that could be a lesson for some footballers. Maybe stick where you are, where you know that you're going to be in a good situation with solid foundations. So yeah, and that goes out to all of our good players. Just stick where you are for the time being, if you don't mind. Will Hughes in particular.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
Jason, Coventry City. I have a bit of a soft spot for Coventry City. We're playing them on the weekend, as you know. One, because they were the first FA Cup final I truly remember, where they beat Tottenham Hotspur. But then also, I think actually my first away trip with the Junior Hornets was to the old Highfield Road? Yeah, to the old Highfield Road. And I also remember a very good trip to the, what's it called? To the Rico when we got relegated and we won about 4-0 under AD Boothroyd. You've got to think we've got a little bit of momentum. We definitely got a really good positive to take forward. And the most important thing is that we sort of keep that going, isn't it? Is it simple as that?
Yeah, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you? We know the Championship is a complex beast, and cliche warning coming up, anyone could beat anyone on their day, as Coventry proved themselves last week when they beat leaders Reading. But they haven't had the best of starts to the season. We're at home again, if that is an advantage in the current situation. But you'd like to think we'd be able to give them a game. What we can't be is complacent. We can't start like we did tonight and give away stupid goals. We know that teams will have seen how we play. They'll have done their homework, like Stoke have done. They'll know that we struggle at set pieces, and they'll obviously be looking to utilise those and sort of cause a threat there. But we should, again, we should be winning these games. We look at the squad we've got. We said right at the very start of the season that could we use the churn in the squad as a reason if we did get off to a bad start, if we did put in poor performances? At that point, I said no, that would seem like an excuse, and that still holds true for me. We talked about a few weeks ago when the transfer deadline passed about the season starts now. It hasn't quite. Perhaps tonight is a watershed moment. It's been a difficult game. We said it was going to be the toughest game out of this little run before the international break, but we've come away with a late victory. We've managed to sort of turn things around right at the death and got the 3 points. So now let's use this as the base. Let's get going. Let's take that into Saturday and come away with a good win against Coventry.
The fact that this is going into, it's the last game before the international break, and there's lots to be done still. Do you think there's a job that has to be done this weekend where Watford do give Andre Gray or somebody else a good hour on that pitch?
No, I don't think so. I think what this squad needs to do is to carry on working towards that identity. You know, I've urged Watford supporters to be patient about and give Vladimir Ivic the chance to get this side playing in his image, playing the way he wants. I think what we saw in the second half was much closer to that than the first half, and by the sounds of things at Barnsley and certainly against Wickham. So we need the second half Watford and more of that to carry on. And I don't think that's about individual players. I think that's about the squad coming together, buying into it and carrying out the plans that are in place. And that's whether that's defensively, not switching off in the first 90 seconds, whether that's being more dominant and imposing in midfield, or whether it's being more hardworking and clinical in the final third. This is a decent squad. We don't need to talk about the lack of a left-footed defender. Everyone knows that that's an issue. But this is a deep squad with talent all over the place, and they just need to keep going. We need to see the dynamic Watford we saw in the second half here. It was there was more movement, there was noise, the substitutes were cheering them on and clapping, lots of noise from Troy Deeney. You won't be surprised to hear on the touchline. It was a different Watford in this second half, and that is the Watford that we absolutely must see more often. And yep, I think Andre Gray is going to be important for Watford going forward. He'll be desperate to get his career back on track. It's been a rough old time for him. You know, I was very harsh on him on the podcast last year after the issues during lockdown and so on and so forth. So he'll feel like he's got something to prove. So I hope he can come in and stake a claim for a starting berth and score some goals. But ultimately, I just want this team to be more consistently better, because I think they can do it. And I think Vladimir Ivic is a good coach with a good group of players. They just need to translate what they're working on onto the pitch more often and in a more sustained basis. So I think it was baby steps today. They've probably got away with one, in as much as we'll wait and see what happened with that first goal. But they've managed to get themselves back into it. That little bit of extra quality has got them the winner right at the death there. But they have to translate this into momentum, and that means winning against Coventry. No ifs, no buts. We have to get some momentum. We've had, you know, this week, if you look at the last, if you look at that little clutch of game, the disappointing games, late equaliser against Bournemouth, disappointing draw against Wickham, and a disappointing defeat against Barnsley. 2 points. We could have had 7 points. We could have held on and should have held on against Bournemouth. Glenn Murray had a chance to win it at death against Wickham. Ben Wilmot had a decent chance with a header against the bar against Barnsley. I'm not saying we deserved to get 7 points from that little clutch of games, but that's how close football is. That's tight. And I think at the end of it, we were all feeling a little bit deflated, weren't we? And we needed tonight as a bit of a fillip. But I think we just need to, never too high, never too low is a phrase that we've used a lot on the podcast and gets used a lot around here. And I think we need to remember that. That last week was disappointing, but it wasn't the end of the world that perhaps it might have felt like. We just need to be a bit better, and we will have much better results, if that makes sense. It's a funny old game tonight, but I think Watford probably will be happy with portions of it. The fact that it was not memorable for large swathes is good for Watford, because it means they're in charge. But they've got to cut out they've got to cut out the mistakes. Be more dynamic, more second half Watford, please.
Let's see what happens when the Sky Blues visit Vicarage Road on Saturday. Thank you very much, Michael.
You're more than welcome. Come on, you horns.
Cheers, Jace.
Cheers to you.
Oh, and Mike, have we figured out who gave you the lift yet?
No, absolutely not. Good reaction to that. I'm glad people seem to enjoy that tale. Mum and Dad weren't overly pleased about being reminded about that fateful Tuesday night. But no, nothing yet. So please, if anyone can remember who it was, I saw someone tagged Charlie Corton from the ticket office in on Facebook, so maybe Charlie can remember it. I doubt it. I'm not that memorable as a spotty 16-year-old. But if anyone's got any leads or got any ideas of how we can track down my Barnsley benefactor, please do let us know.
That's from the Rookery End. Get in touch at Watford Podcast on social medias, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, and we're back with another podcast. Do tell your friends that you can get us wherever you normally get a podcast. Come on, you horns!